Thank you. Okay, I will.
What?
You will fly to go to the house. What is house room?
Huh?
The house room is when you bring the other from the temple.
Our temple president.
But there must be one main stop in Ecclesiastes.
Yes, you get printed out and enlarged. On the wall.
Okay, just try and pray to Hanuman. He will find him. Okay? Haribol. Alltså, men det är ju liksom en liten samhälle då, med butiker och tåg och... Nej, det är sant, du måste vara, och där ska det gå. Det är där en slags busskraft i bestämning av. Okej. Och vara med till Kristus också. Haribol. Idag som ska komma.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Come in. Welcome. Sorry, I'm
just finish the music. Yeah, you hate music anyway. Tasya karyam karanam cha vidyate na tat samascha vyadikastra jishyate parasya shakti vividaiva shuyate svabhavike jnana bala kriyacha. The Supreme Lord has nothing to do. Nothing is equal to him or greater than him. He acts in different faces by manifesting his parts and parcels, which are all simultaneously different, situated by his unlimited variegated potency. Each potency acts quite naturally in sequences provided, providing him full knowledge, power, and pastimes. So, Krishna showed Mother Yasoda his mouse, because everyone said that he had eaten clay. And Mother Yasoda looked in Krishna's mouth and to see if there was any clay. And Mother Yasoda saw the entire universe. And she saw within the universe all the planetary systems. And she saw all the different presiding deities of these planetary systems. And in this way, Mother Yasoda was also seeing the planet where she was looking into Krishna's mouth. And there she saw again an entire universe with planetary systems and so on, and there was no end to this. And it's very interesting, because we see that Lord Krishna is within the universe. He is walking around within Vrindavan with his cows and cowherd boys, performing his pastimes, and yet the universe at the same time is within him. How is it possible? Yeah? How is that possible? Just think about it. He is within the universe, and at the same time the universe is within him. So this is inconceivable if we think of how Krishna is doing. So in this way we can look at Krishna, who is the origin of all the various universes and of all this energy that we are seeing. And there is an unlimited variety, and it is amazing how everything is coming about. We have driven far to get here, crossing waters, and somehow or other reached the other shore to come in Catherine's little country house, which is so small that she thought there was no place for anyone. But somehow or other, we just fit in her double-story summer mansion. with a view over the Côte d'Azur. It is very nice, and we can see Krishna's opulence. We can see how Krishna is manifesting so much beauty on this planet, and how all this beauty on this planet is showing us something about Krishna. It shows us that Krishna is unlimited. To us, even this material nature looks unlimited. The ocean just looks unlimited to us. To Krishna, it's a drop. To Krishna, it's just a drop Ekam Sin Stitu Jagat, just this entire universal arrangement of so many universes for Krishna is just a tiny little particle, nothing to him, but to us, just looking at this world, it is so vast, so great, and so full of unlimited variety. The house is nice, right? But it's the view that makes it. It's because it's the view that is nice, and that's Krishna, right? So it's Krishna. We are seeing Krishna. We're looking at the miracles that Krishna is manifesting to us, the amazing energy that he displays here in the material world. And then we realize that what is happening here in the material world is only like a little spark of what is happening in the spiritual world. So the devotee is different than the impersonalist. The impersonalist turns away from the world. The impersonalist is looking at this world and is rejecting the entire world as illusion and suffering. But the devotee is not like that. The devotee is relating to this world, to the beauty of the world. It's just this world is full of amazing variety, of amazing splendor, of amazing experiences. Because Krishna's energies interact, and they also act within us. We can see how things are changing, how things are growing. Like yesterday, we were reading from the Talmud, and in the Talmud, it is said that every blade of grass has an angel that speaks to it and says, "Grow, grow, grow." It's quite nice how, and it is true, there are unlimited devatas, right? 33 crores of devatas. A crore is 10 million, so 33 devatas, divine living beings who are controlling the different universal affairs, and they in turn are again assisted by so many other beings that it is incountable. We cannot imagine, but it is a fact that everyone in this world, everything is going on by personal arrangement. The wind blows and there are demigods who are in control of all that. The grass grows and all that is going on, and behind it all is Krishna. And we're seeing in this way everywhere Krishna. We see nothing loose from Krishna. We see everywhere Krishna, but in such a natural way, not in a way that we have to always force our mind and meditation on Krishna. Wherever we look, we simply see Krishna's energy and how everything relates to Krishna. Why not? Right? Yes. This is also Krishna consciousness. So it is. In this way, there is. It is not difficult. Because we just have to look a little further. I'm seeing clouds, and I know we just have to look above the clouds, beyond the clouds, and there is Krishna. Of course, we all boarded the plane and we heard that God, the shepherd, was walking on the clouds, right? And there is a shepherd walking on the clouds. We heard about that. But when we flew, everyone has flown SAS or something like that, and above the clouds, no angels, no shepherds, no sheep, nothing like that, right? Oof. Yes, well, the priests who told us about the sheep and shepherds in the past have, in modern times, withdrawn, and they've said to a second position, They have dug themselves in the second trench. And basically they have said that, well, that part, that was symbolical for the simple people, right, who need to ascribe some human form to God, but ultimately he is an all-pervading intelligence, right, and therefore he is everywhere and nowhere. Simultaneous. So then we are, yeah, everywhere and nowhere, yeah, because he is and he is not, in the Mayavad philosophy, of course. Yeah. So don't get confused now. This is this is Mayavad, right? So in this way they have withdrawn. Sorry, boys. Mayavad. I don't come and sit here. So in this way the Mayavadis, they think that behind everything is a connecting energy, and they think that all the variety of form in this world is simply a covering. They don't see anything above there. But we are not looking like that. We see the personality of Krishna everywhere. A Bombay journalist was interviewing the astronaut Neil Armstrong and was asking him, Mr. Armstrong, when you were out there in outer space, did you have a religious experience? Armstrong said, I think that God was on the other side. I didn't see him anywhere. Maybe he was in the backyard. So, like this, people have ideas that somewhere there has to be a God, but nobody has seen him. But we know that Krishna exists far beyond the sky, far beyond the space where Neil Armstrong went, and that Krishna is way beyond it. We have a story also in Srimad Bhagavatam. The story is about one Brahmana. And this Brahmana, he was a peaceful Brahmana, married and everything, and in due course of time his wife was expecting a child. And the child took birth, and then just immediately after birth, the child just disappeared into nowhere, as if it had just disappeared and ceased to exist. So the Brahmana naturally was very disturbed then, and complained to the king. No one could do anything. In due course of time, the Brahmana's wife was again expecting, and a nice healthy child born, same thing. Child gone. In this way, the children were just disappearing one after another. So the Brahmana was calling out, what is going on in this kingdom? Are there no more Kshatriyas on this planet? Are there only eunuchs? Right? Are there no more Kshatriyas to protect anyone? So when Arjuna heard this, he couldn't tolerate it. So Arjuna went there and said, I am Arjuna, and this is my bow, Gandiva. And this bow, Gandiva, from this bow, so many arrows have been shot that never missed their target. I will personally vow to protect you, and I will stand guard. And when again a child will take birth, I will be there waiting, guard the house from all directions, and no one will be able to come near and take the child. And I vow, if I will not be able to protect this child, I will enter into fire. So, heavy duty vow. And Well, the time came near, another child expected, and Arjuna stood there. And he had arrows that were protecting all the 10 directions. 4 directions on in 4 corners, the directions in between, the direction upwards, the direction downwards. No one could come near unseen. And Arjuna was standing guard. The Brahmana's wife gave birth to a nice child. The nice child appeared for a moment, and then the child just again disappeared. So, from the house, cries were there. What a fool was I to believe that this eunuch Arjuna could protect us. This hopeless, helpless imitation of a Kshatriya, right? And so on. So, this useless, and all these kind of words. So Arjuna was totally shocked. The child had gone. So Arjuna said, "Wait, I will go to the abode of Yamaraj." And he went to the abode of Yamaraj. No child. He looked everywhere. Not found. So in this way, all the different presiding deities of the water and so on, no one knew anything about the whereabouts of the child. The child was gone from the face of the earth. Because normally, one should know that although we think sometimes, alone at last, door locked, just me and nobody can see me now. Now I can do anything I want. At that time, don't forget, there are 13 witnesses. 13 witnesses watching everything at that time. The earth, the sky, the sun, the moon, the day, the night, and many more. And also the super soul is there. And Yamaraj definitely is there. And his assistant Chitragupta is writing everything down. Everything recorded. Oh yes, he knows it very well. And the files are being kept. Right? So everything is there. So whatever we do, there are witnesses and so on. But in this case, no witness to the scene of the crime. Even the demigods had not seen what happened to the child. Nobody knew. Arjuna was getting serious about the fire. He was collecting wood and he was getting it together to start a serious fire. And just as Arjuna was about to light the stack of wood, Krishna appeared right there on that location. And Krishna said, "Wait!" Okay. Yes. "No, there's nothing to wait for. I'm going to enter this fire. I have miserably failed. I have vowed that if I cannot protect this child, that I will enter the fire. So, I will enter." "No, wait! No, I will get into the fire." No. We can. Find this child. We can. Okay. Arjuna turned around and Krishna said, "Yes. Come in my chariot." And they went with Krishna's chariot and they drove right into the sky, straight up, past the clouds, past outer space where Neil Armstrong had been spaced out. And even further than that, right? Then they came to the external layers of the universe. It is said that the universe is like the shape of an egg and that around this universe there are different layers. Right? It is said first a layer of earth, then a layer of water, then a layer of fire, a layer of air and then a layer of ether. Thick layers, each time 10 times thicker than the other. And then mind, intelligence, false ego, and in this way all these layers are covering the universe. And Krishna and Arjuna were riding through these layers, and as they were going through these layers, it was getting totally dark. Totally dark. Not just a little dark, but dark. Yeah, pitch dark. Then Krishna released his Sudarshan Chakra, and the disc was spinning in front of the chariot, and in this way light was there. And they went right out of the universe, and they crossed the partition between the material world and the spiritual world, which is known as the causal ocean, sometimes also known as the Viraja River. And they crossed this causal ocean and then came to a big palace. And this was the palace of Lord Mahavishnu. Huge form. And Lord Mahavishnu, when he saw Krishna together with Arjuna, then Lord Mahavishnu bowed down to Krishna. And it turned out that it was Lord Mahavishnu who had stolen the children. And they were being returned happily and good. All good. Yeah. They were back, and then Krishna and Arjuna, they returned, and the Brahmana received his children in return. And Lord Mahavishnu had stolen these children because he wanted to have the darshan of Krishna, because he knew that he knew about this Brahmana, and he could foresee the future, and he knew that Arjuna would never be able to tolerate being called a eunuch, and he knew that Arjuna would just be there, and that Arjuna would fall into the trap, and that Arjuna wouldn't be able to do anything, and then Arjuna would want to enter the fire, and then Krishna was forced to save his friend. And Krishna, who knew everything, knew of course who had the children. So then Krishna would have to come. In this way, Lord Mahavishnu got the darshan of Krishna, which is amazing, because Mahavishnu is the form of the Supreme Lord, from whom all the universes emanate. And this form is also an expansion of Krishna. And even in this form, the Supreme Lord is worshipping Krishna. Ekaleshwar or Sarva Britcha Yarya Chanacha Tarakarchanicha. There is one Supreme Lord, and all others are dependent, and all others are worshipping him. Right? So even Mahavishnu is worshipping Krishna. That is the amazing thing. And in this way, we saw this in this pastime of Krishna. So later, Lord Mahavishnu returned in the form of Advaita Acharya, and there Lord Mahavishnu, as Advaita Acharya, also wanted to worship Krishna, who had now appeared in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he always wanted to worship Lord Chaitanya, but Lord Chaitanya, no, he would not accept it, because Advaita Acharya was senior, he was the godbrother of his spiritual master. He said, no, no. But somehow or other, rather than being worshipped by Advaita Acharya, Lord Chaitanya would also always worship Advaita Acharya. Always. And Advaita Acharya could not tolerate it. This is too much, being worshipped by Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, one day, Advaita Acharya was so fed up that he was always getting so much respect from Lord Chaitanya that one day he devised a plan. And that day, he decided. He started preaching from the Yoga Vasistha, one scripture full of impersonal Mayavadi philosophy. And he started to preach that the oneness of everything is the all and all. And behind the form of Krishna, there is the one all-pervading energy. He was preaching like this. And suddenly from nowhere, Lord Chaitanya appeared. And Lord Chaitanya walked up to him, grabbed him, threw him off the Vyasasana on the ground, kicked him. And the wife of Advaita Acharya, Sita Thakurani, was standing there and saying, like, Stop, stop, he is an old man. Please don't kick him. You'll kill him. Stop it. And Lord Chaitanya kept on kicking and kicking. Just to make it so clear, what is the origin, right? The origin is the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality, and from him everything else is emanating, and even from him is emanating all this energy, and even the impersonal energy, which looks so impersonal, behind it is the personality. So everywhere is Krishna, right? Everywhere. And therefore, stavara jangama dekena dekatara murti sarvatahaya istadeva spurti, a devotee, he sees everywhere, whether he sees the moving or the non-moving beings, the trees or the animals, everywhere he is seeing Krishna. Behind. He sees Krishna behind. And Prabhupada was always thinking like this. He would challenge. Let them make an egg. An egg. Right? Let them make an egg. Just one egg. Not an imitation plastic egg, right, that they can do. No, an egg, a real egg that can produce a chicken. But they cannot do. Krishna is only when Krishna is behind. But the amazing thing Prabhupada is saying is that he said people, they are interested in the imitation. Yeah? If somebody makes a plastic flower, everyone goes like, wow, that's amazing. Yeah? But the real flower, they think, well, that's just a flower. But a plastic flower that looks really like the real thing, wow, that's amazing. Prabhupada said, they go for imitation. Huh? Said, if a man in a theater is doing an imitation of a dog, people pay a lot of money. But for a real dog, nobody will look, Prabhupada says. It talks like this. So, here we are. People are interested in all the imitation in this world, but no one's interested in Krishna. That's amazing. But Krishna is behind everything, and he's nice. And therefore, we can also appreciate this material world. Therefore, the devotee can look at the material world and say, although this is not a place for a gentleman, although this material world is not a place to stay, because after all, here everything is temporary, but at the same time, here in this material world, there are many wonderful things. It's midsummer. And it was a good midsummer day. Right? Unlike the last few days, where it sort of looked like, well, mid-storm or mid-rain or mid-miserable or whatever. Right? Today, it is really midsummer. And it is nice. Summer is nice. Right? It's very nice. And this little house is nice, and the water is nice, and the hill and everything is very nice, and that's okay. We can actually appreciate it, that we are in a nice place. It's not Maya. It's not that we have to go like, take this lake away. It's from the devil. It's dangerous. Oh no, a little boat on the lake. It reminds me of sense gratification. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Not like that. Right? We can actually appreciate the lake. But not just the lake, not just the boat, but Krishna behind. And in this way we can, and of course the beauty of the material world may even remind us of more. It is true that when Lord Chaitanya saw the ocean in Puri, he thought it was Yamuna. When Lord Chaitanya saw a hill He thought it was Govardhan. But not artificial, he really thought it was Govardhan. He really thought it was Yamuna. So we cannot imitate that. But even if it reminds us a little bit of the Yamuna, that's nice. That's although this is a bit big for the Yamuna, maybe it's the Kaliya Lake. Big serpent will rise out of the water any moment. Who knows? No, but we may remember the pastimes of Krishna, or we may just see the energies of Krishna, and we may appreciate how the energies of Krishna are also helping us to come to Krishna. As it says in Bhagavatam, that the beauty of this world is the smile of Krishna. And I like that very much. It's very important to me, because otherwise it means I have to go live somewhere in a cave far away from the world and lock myself away from the world. If the beauty in this world is all the witchcraft of Maya, then I'm in trouble. Then I'm in big trouble, because then I have to constantly run away from this world and hide from it. But if I can see that the beauty in this world is Krishna, then I can actually be here and be natural, because it's nice to be in a place like this. But if I see it all as the beauty and the witchcraft of Maya, I have to make crosses and I have to block it out and not see it, so that I don't remember it and dream about it tonight on this lake. But now I can. And if in my dream there is just the lake and no Krishna, I will not worry, because I know that the lake is coming from Krishna. So in that way I see Krishna. So in the work of Krishna we also see Krishna. In the energy of Krishna we see Krishna. Parashya Shakti Vividaiva Suryate, as we were speaking, I don't know where it was because the page has flicked, but as we were speaking about the unlimited varieties of energies of Krishna. Yeah, just as we're looking at a child, in a child's body, there's something about it. It's like, of course we can say, oh, that's just a body. A body, right? A material thing, a body, right? It's like, oh, my God. But something is attractive to children, young animals also, jumping, dancing, and the movements they make, ears that are playing, racing around. All these things are attractive, isn't it? It's like very attractive. So if you need an animal for a play, I can...
I'm sorry, can I say something about small animals?
Please.
Yesterday I saw a big man having a string here to a little puppy who refused to walk. And he couldn't. The little puppy was just interested in everything else behind him.
Yeah. And the man stood.
Yeah, of course, he couldn't do anything.
So there's an incredible power, right? The power of youth, the power of innocence, the power of childhood, it's very powerful. And you can just say, that's all Maya, because that's part of the body. Yeah, but we don't say that. I know, he's offended. I shouldn't have said that. Sorry, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I really didn't mean it.
It
was just a joke. Because we realize that it's Krishna. This is Krishna's creation, Krishna's plan, Krishna's arrangement. Krishna creates the miracle. Right? So it's Krishna who it's amazing to see how Krishna made all these things. And that children or young creatures, young animals and all these are attractive, and that it's just something else, you know. One year in Vrindavan, the Gurukulis, you know, we used to all live in one building. The Brahmachari ashram was upstairs, and then the Gurukulis were one floor down, and they had a big veranda. We didn't. We had a small balcony, like 1.5 meters, but they had like 6 meters of balcony. And then it was raining, and it was like marble tiles or something, slippery stone tiles. And all the kids were sliding, you know? And all the adults were hanging over the railing and watching, right? It was something, everyone, you know, was captured, mesmerized, you know, as if it was like the finale of the World Football Cup or something. Everyone was totally absorbed and watching those kids sliding because it's just attractive. That's Krishna's arrangement. So this is all part of the miracle that is Krishna. So a devotee can see Krishna in that and can see how we see how amazing Krishna has arranged everything. And in this way, Krishna consciousness is not something artificial that, you know, I can't live. I can't live because I'm Krishna conscious. No, we can live. We can live in this world, with this world, and we can select in this world. Say, nice, not nice. Okay, not nice. No, no go. Go to the nice place and be there and be Krishna conscious. Appreciate the nice. Tolerate the not so nice. And take it. But take it all as an impetus to search out Krishna. But while we're living a natural life. And that's what sold me on Krishna consciousness, I must say. I have maybe told you before that once I went to a Buddhist monastery which was in Holland, and it was an old medieval tower, and there was a canal around it and a bridge, and then at 6 o'clock at night you could go inside, and at 7 o'clock they would pull up the bridge and not let it down until 10 o'clock the next morning. So anyway, I thought, well, it's only for a night, you know, I'll probably survive it, right? Let's check it out. And if it really gets too much, I have a swimming diploma. So, you know, I thought, I'll just escape, right? But, so I stayed there. And, well, it got up at 4 o'clock, and then there were prayers, Tibetan, they had song sheets, they're singing some songs, and say some Tibetan mantras, you know, so we also song sheet. Like that it sounds. And this was going on for a while. A little meditation, a little pranayam, you know. Okay, you know, done that before, so that didn't shock me. I could handle that. But then at one point, finally, at 8 o'clock, the whole thing was over. And it was time for breakfast. And what they gave one small piece of bread, serious, no bigger than this, right? Very small, with miso on top. I don't know if you know miso, it is, if you don't, it is black, salty soybean paste.
Sour.
And it's sour, black, salty. And as far as I'm concerned, it's short for miserable. Right? And that's what we got for breakfast. And as I saw that, you know, I got some realizations, right? And I was thinking, it cannot be like this, spiritual life. This cannot be it. This cannot be the process. It cannot be a process of self-denial. I don't believe that spiritual life is a process of self-denial. It cannot be. And of denial of the world. It is all about denial. No. I cannot buy into this. Right? And I was already standing waiting at the bridge at 8:30, you know. And he came after me. Well, but why are you so eager to leave? You know, what happened? I said, well, it's all right, you know, just got to let the bridge down a little sooner. I was the first one over the bridge. And but this is the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. We can live fully, you know. We can fully live and fully appreciate the good of this world and yet see Krishna. And that is wonderful. And this way we can celebrate the midsummer here in this nice place and be totally Krishna conscious. With a little help of my friends. Do you need anybody? I just need someone to love. I've been reading about George Harrison and the Beatles last few days, so all this, it's all back now.
Yes, a new bio.
New book called Here Comes the Sun. Quite interesting. Yes. Very interesting. That will come soon. It shows how he's a devotee, but it also shows how he's not a devotee, in the sense how he's a little bit in Maya at the same time, and it shows how philosophically there is also a little bit of liberalness there, here and there, a bit of mixture with a few Mayavadis that walk in every once in a while, but at the end, Prabhupada his faith in Prabhupada is strong. And the amount of mercy that came through him was very great. And even the Beatles in general, even before George Harrison became Krishna conscious, because they touched upon some genuine elements in life. I remember many lyrics that were actually, they made sense, you know. Things that I liked, like, it doesn't matter whether you're wrong or right. It doesn't matter whether I'm wrong or right. Where I belong, I'm right. You know, where I belong. That makes sense to me. You know? So I think now I know where I belong with the devotees. You know, I pray that I may always belong with the devotees. So, commentarios.
I have a question.
Huh?
My question, maybe. Or.
Okay. Whatever you want.
But, now, you talked about this vision where you, you know, where you can be in this world and appreciate it and still and see Krishna and still not be caught, not be attached. But, you know, to develop this vision, what is the most important, because this is not something that happens like this. It's like it requires some real transformation of the heart to be able to see, to be relaxed in this way, you might say.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, for that, of course, we seek out the association of devotees. We regularly hear about Krishna. We chant the holy name of Krishna. We jump up and down in kirtan. We take lots of prasadam. What we don't do for all that, right? It's like, phew, we do amazing things. We fast, right? We fast on a day like Janmashtami. But instead of, like, you know, peacefully getting to the fast, we simultaneously do a cooking marathon. What a strange thing to do, right? You're fasting, and the whole day you're working with food, you know. what an idea, right? It's like the first time I went through this, you know. I mean, I went through my first Gaur Purnim, and it happened to be in the Bhaktivedanta Manor in England, and there's the big room, you know, the big sort of reception room now it is, and they locked us in that room, and there were unlimited sweet balls, and we were just sitting there rolling more and more sweet balls and then on trays, and then pushed the tray further into the room, and the whole we're sitting the whole day in an ocean of sweet balls, fasting, making more and more sweet balls. And I was thinking, what in the world are we doing? What is this? You know, I couldn't relate to it. I was just like, where am I? This is surrealistic. You know, this is like, huh? What's going on here? This is a very bizarre movie. You know, it's some sort of dream, and the balls are getting bigger and bigger. You know? The sweet ball. So, it was really some strange drama. So we do so much. Right? We observe many festivals. We come together again and again. We hear, we chant. Yeah, we do a lot to be devotees. But then there, on the other side, the result is also amazing. Because then everything becomes meaningful, and then everything becomes natural. So I spoke about the naturalness of Krishna consciousness, which is the result of deep practice. But then it will be like that, and it is that's nice, because that's what we always thought spiritual life must be. It must be something very natural. This week I've been talking about this, my upcoming seminar about vows, and then some time ago I was asking Satchinandan Maharaj, so you have any comments on this topic? You know, he's saying, well, you know, you can deal with the fact that people they say that vows are unnatural, that in a way taking a vow is like putting yourself in a sort of an artificial mold, and that is just the opposite from spiritual, because that spiritual must be completely natural and coming from the heart. Maybe you can deal with that topic also. Well, if I deal with that topic, then of course when I say nature, yeah, our nature is fine, but we have a dual nature, higher nature and lower nature. And before we can become natural, we must first be purified from the lower nature. Lust, greed, anger and all the other destructive ones that we have to become purified. Only after that can we become natural. If in our present state we start to become natural, I don't know what's going to happen. But that may be a bit, may not be good for the world, right? Just as children, you know, if you let them do everything, let them be all natural, you never restrict them, what are they going to become? Or what are they going to do to themselves? You know, how many windows are they going to fall out and what not? Yeah. What are they going to break? And what are we going to break? What will we break? What will we smash if we become natural, if we don't first purify ourselves? So we go through this purification, but then Krishna consciousness is the most natural process. A process, not a process of denial, but a process of appreciation. And that's very nice. And the proof is in the breakfast. Better than a Buddhist breakfast. If you go for breakfast, you know, better go to a Hare Krishna temple than to a Buddhist temple. That's what I can tell you. Practical experience. Yes, Kat.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Bhagavatam, which is the complete presentation of Krishna, big part of it is about...
You have some wood.
not about Krishna and Vrindavana, but it's about creation over and over again.
Yes.
So, and Prabhupada is saying that one shouldn't jump over this just because it seems to be a little technical or boring in one sense. But, you know, take in that also, and then you will be blessed. Then you can see.
Yeah, Krishna is here. Krishna is here now, and Krishna is behind everything. Krishna is connected to everything. Then we can see. And that's why we study the creation and the structure of the universe and all these things, because otherwise, what do we care about the structure of the universe? And they say that according to the